2 Timothy chapter 4, read in the paper today, gave a short story of an old soldier that died yesterday. On February the 1st, 1901, Frank Buckley was born and tried to join the Marines in World War I. He was too young, so he went down to the Navy and tried to join. They wouldn't let him join, so he went and lied to the Army. He joined. The old soldier died yesterday, 110 years old. But the amazing thing about it, he was the last soldier of World War I. You know what that means? There's no more soldiers in World War I. You can't sit down and talk to them about what they went through. You can't sit down and talk to one about how they made it through. Those soldiers, gone. Which is the theme of my subject tonight in 2 Timothy chapter 4. I'd love to read the whole chapter. I pray you do. I pray you have. But I take some thoughts in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse number 6, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. Nothing wrong with fighting. Just make sure it's a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. The thing I want you to notice in those two verses is how many times that Paul uses the word I. Most independents don't like to use the word I that much. We don't want I to get involved. We want God to do all our fighting. Well, that's pretty true. But Paul said, I fought. Paul said, I kept the faith. You see, there's just some things in life you're going to have to do for yourself. God's not going to come down here and make you go to church. You're going to have to fight to do that. God's not going to come down here and make you read your Bible. You have to fight to do that. God's not going to come down here and make you tithe. You have to fight to do that. It's a fight. When you open this chapter of 2 Timothy chapter 4, it's like walking into a room of a dying soldier. Paul is at the end of his course. And I think most of us, we have a heart's desire that we want to finish right. But if you haven't learned by now, it's going to be a fight to finish right. I'm reminded in my mind, my wife and I, we travel constantly. We go to a lot of churches every year or every 2 years. And I'm thinking of a church that I've been going to now for pretty close to 12, 13 years. And the pastor had a right-hand man, a good man, that was there with him every step of the way. But when we went back last year, he's no longer there. He got mad because of somebody in the church. And that boy that had been with him for years did not finish that course. And you and I really don't know what we're going to face that's going to make our course difficult. But Paul did say this. He said it was a fight. And if we want to finish that course, then wouldn't you like to ask somebody that finished it how they finished it? Probably not a better man to ask than Paul, because he finished. And so I look at Paul. I'm sitting there standing beside him. We don't have much time to ask him many questions because his departure is at hand. That's pretty close, isn't it? I mean, he just got a short time. We're not going to be able to ask him a lot of questions, but maybe we can ask him a few. I mean, I'd like to know some things about this race. And I'm looking down at Paul, and I'm wanting, you know, it's independence hall. We want somebody to tell us what to do. That's good and that's bad. And I asked Paul, I said, Paul, how did you make it through all the afflictions and conflicts and troubles? I'd like to know how he did it. Now, he hadn't got much time. His departure's at hand. And he merely looks up at us and he just says this, I thought. I just thought. Is that it, Paul? That all you got to say? I just thought. How did you handle all the perils of your own brethren and your own countrymen? Paul looked back and, boy, we're wanting some kind of answer to help us. And Paul looks back and he just merely says, I thought that too. Just thought my way through it. How'd you survive the mental distresses? Paul said, I just thought. How did you deal with the weariness and the pain? I thought that too. How'd you carry the care of the churches when the wolves were coming in? Paul said, I thought that too. How did you go when all the men forsook you and you seemed to be all by yourself? And Paul said, I thought. The old soldier is just about to finish his fight. You know what old soldiers like to do when they come down to the end of their life? They like to reminisce. Well, nothing like an old soldier loves to tell you what he's been through. They love to talk about it. You'd ask Paul about his 60-odd years of life, 30 years of it in the ministry. You'd ask him, any regrets? If you had to ask him about this war, this fight that he was in, his reply merely would be at the end of his life, at the finish of his course, he'd say, I just fought a good fight. I fought up every hill. I fought down every valley. I fought through every storm. I fought through everything that the enemy shot at me. I just fought. Not long before General MacArthur died on April the 14th, 1964, he was standing in an assembly giving a speech to a bunch of young cadets that were fixing to become officers in our armed forces. I'd love to read to you the whole message, the whole speech that he gave, but I take the last paragraph. His closing remarks. He said these words. He said, in my dreams, I hear again the crash of guns and the rattle of musketry, the strange and mournful mutter of the battlefield. But in the evening of my memory, I always come back to West Point, and there echoes and re-echoes duty and honor and country. He said, today marks my final roll call with you, but I want you to know that when I cross the river, my last conscience thoughts will be on the core, the core, the core. I bid you farewell. And I look at Paul. Paul is in his final hours. These are the final words that the Apostle Paul left mankind. And we have them written. And in Paul's final hours, you can hear the sound of the war and the fight that he had been through. He says, preach the word. Now, you know what preaching is? It's the clashing of those heavenly swords. There's not another sound in all of humanity like preaching. Not another sound like it nowhere in all the world. It's got its own sound. It's the sound of heavenly warfare. It's where divine nature is taking on human nature. Tell me that's not a fight. It's the sound of a gospel cannon roaring from the mount. It's the sound of a spiritual fight of freedom for some soul. And when Paul crosses the river, his last conscience thoughts is still on the fight. Preach the word, he said. Verse 5, he said, do the work. And he says also, make full proof of your ministry. Paul's thoughts and Paul's words are on the work of God. He dies thinking about the work of God. Old soldiers, General Westmoreland said, must bear the scars of war. General Westmoreland shouldered the burden of Vietnam. When he got down to the end of his life, here's his final words. He said, I have no apologies. I have no regrets. I gave my best effort. I have been hung in effigy. I have been spat upon. He said, but you just have to let those things bounce off. The Apostle Paul bore in his body the marks of this fight. If you was to take Paul's robe off when he's laying on that bed, 5 times 40 stripes, less one, you know how many stripes you would count on his back? 195 scars and stripes would be upon his back for what he endured to serve Christ and stay in the work of God. He bore those scars in his heart. He bore those scars in his memory. And Paul, here in his final hours, he has no apologies. He has no regrets. He says, I gave my best effort. I fought a good fight. Paul had been stoned. Paul had been scourged. Paul had been shipwrecked. Paul had been snake bit. Paul had been shackled. But he says, you just have to let all those things bounce off. And he said it with these words, lay it not to their charge. I don't care what man's done to me. I don't care what man said to me. I don't care what difficulties he's put in front of me. I fought my way through it all. When it comes to old soldiers dying, there's not another scene that's greater than the death of Stonewall Jackson. All the books put it in there, but of all, I've read probably 12 biographies on Stonewall, and the best book that you'll read on the death of Stonewall is Dabney's book, who was a Presbyterian preacher and the chief of staff with Stonewall Jackson. But in his book, he's got that final hour death scene of Stonewall Jackson. He writes, as the evening wore away, his suffering increased. Jackson laying on that bed, he had his generals and his staff was around him. His wife had got there before he died. And Stonewall looks up from that bed and he says, would you sing the Psalms? And all those men got their Bibles and turned to Psalm 51. And they begin to sing Psalm 51 as that old soldier started slipping out. The night was spent feverishly tossing without sleep. His wife looked at him in the mid-morning and said, you must soon be in heaven. Well, before the day closes, you'll be with the blessed Savior. Jackson looked up at her and he said, I shall be an infinite gainer. In and out of consciousness, Stonewall was coming out, in and out of consciousness, and he's still fighting. At one point, he hollers, A.P. Hill, prepare for action. Another time, he said, Major Hawks, send forth provisions for the troops. Then there was a long silence, and he gave his final words when he said, let's just cross over the river and rest beneath the shade of the tree. Paul is nearing the finish line, and the old soldier is still fighting. He's on his deathbed, and the departure's at hand. But he hasn't give up the fight. Listen, he fought that fight all the way to his final breath. He starts by saying, I charge. He's on his deathbed. He's fixing to die. And he still says, I charge. I charge. He's still preaching. He's still got the Bible in his hand. He's still in the pulpit. He's still got that voice lifted up. Paul is still fighting the fight. I charge you, preach the word. He says in those final hours to the church of God throughout the next two millennium, he said, watch in verse 5. Watch, church. Watch where you're going. Watch what you're doing. Watch who you're with. Watch what you're watching. Watch, church. He says in his final breath, endure affliction. You know what that means? You better learn to fight hurt. You better learn to keep going when you hurt. Afflictions are part of war, he said, but you got to endure those afflictions. He said, do the work. Gets down to his final breath, and he said, finish your course. If you read Paul's letters, they're filled with the language of war. He says, war, good warfare, in one place. He says, good soldier. Another place he uses the word fight. Another place he uses the word strive. If you got to strive, that means you've got opposition. Endure hardness. Weapons. Armor. He uses the word enemy. He uses the word suffer. He uses the word wounds. Swords. And shields, and helmet, and conflict. One point he said, my son, be strong, like a general talking to a private. And if you haven't learned this already, we are at war. We're at war with the world. We're at war with our own flesh. We are at war with the devil. Oh, well, listen, we got a three-front battle we've got to fight. Paul's last commandments, one of his last commands that he gives, he says to Timothy, bring me my books. I know Paul wasn't a Baptist. He said, bring me my books. Did you know reading about war will stir your blood? It'll stir your blood. Because in those books there's action. In a book of war, there's bravery. In a book about fighting, there's suffering and sacrifice and glory and death. Reading about war will make you struggle just a little harder. Reading about war will make you give you strength for the fight. You can always tell where I'm at in my life. If you ask me, what are you reading? And if I'm reading a book on war, it's because I'm in a rough spot in my life. Every time I get in a rough spot, I get me a book of war. Because it stirs my blood. Next thing I know, I'm wanting to get something and just fight. So here's Paul in these final hours. Here's Paul with his departure at hand. And he reminisces in this chapter, and he reminisces about four things that I want to preach on. And the first thing that Paul, that he brings up, that you, if, when you read the whole chapter, is this dedication to his brethren. Can I call it a band of brothers? Can I call it just a band of brothers? Verse 21, he just groups them all in. He said, all the brethren. Paul gets to talking about men that never deserted him. Boy, there were men. Listen, if you hung with Paul, you're going to get stung. You're going to get hurt if you was to get in the work with Paul. And Paul looks back with his departure at hand at some men that just stayed with him, that stayed with him in this fight. They got down in the foxhole of trouble with him, with the shells coming in him, and they didn't ever desert him. I don't care how fierce the fight got. I don't care how much death there was all around him. There were some men that stayed with Paul through thick and thin. You couldn't run them off if you wanted to. The devil, you know, tried, and he couldn't do it. And Paul begins to think about all these men he served with. He brings up Timothy, that faithful one that never disappointed him. That one that just he did everything that Paul asked him to do. If Paul asked him to go to Ephesus, can you imagine going from Corinth to Ephesus? And you had to cross that Aegean Sea. You had to go up that coastline. And Timothy done everything that the apostle asked him. Never one time failed him. He brings up Luke. Luke never deserted him. In fact, when Paul cuts down to the end of his life and he looks beside him, he said, only Luke's with me. You're going to get down to the end of your life and you're going to count all your friends on one hand. One hand. Listen, Luke stayed with him all the way to the end. And then Paul brings up Mark. Oh, Mark, he got out. He disappointed him, but he got back in. And Paul thought it worthwhile to bring his name up in his final hours. Oh, Mark. He brings up Tychius. Tychius carried the letters of Ephesus and Colossians. Can you imagine trusting someone so much to carry the divine word of God? To have somebody that you've got that much confidence in that you can place this heavenly letter in their hand and ask them to carry it across miles and desert places. He brings up Carpus. He says, I left my cloak in Troas. And he said, Carpus, when you come, bring my cloak. And Carpus is one that I really take my hat off to because Paul trusted him with his books. Carpus, when you come, would you bring... Listen, I don't know nobody on the face of the earth I can trust my books with. When I let people in my house, I just let them look at them. You can't touch them, you can't smell them, you can't read them, you can't hold them. I let a guy one time borrow one of my books, and he kept it for a year. And every time I looked up there was a gap on that shelf, and it looked like a smile with a tooth missing. And I looked up there, and I missed that book so much, I cried. When it finally got back to me, I held it for days and hugged it and said, I'll never let you leave again. My books! Priscilla and Aquila laid down their necks for Paul. He bringing these up. Erastus was a chamberlain of Corinth, and Pudon was a bashful. Pudon, in that word means bashful. Pudon was one of them kind of guys that never said much. You never seen him out front, but he was always in the back, bringing up everything that Paul needed. Linus was a helper in Rome. Claudia was a lady at the church in Rome. And then Paul, he doesn't have much time with his departure at hand. Then he just kind of says, all the brethren. And you go back through Paul's life, and surely he thought of Barnabas. I mean, when he was stoned at Beera, Paul, Barnabas was with him, and it was Barnabas that went down and got him and brought him to that great revival in Antioch. Then there's Lydia that gave Paul her house in Philippi that let him build that great church and that great work in Philippi. And then there's the jailer that Paul probably would have died of infection had not he got Paul after he had been scourged and washed those wounds and cleaned those wounds. And Paul finished his course. Yes, he did, but not without brothers and sisters. Not without brothers and sisters. Not without faithful friends. And don't become so independent, that you think that you can run this race by yourself. You can't do it. You've got to have brothers and sisters. You're going to have weak seasons, and somebody's going to have to pray for you and hold your hands up. Not without the saints, young and old. Not without fellow preachers and soldiers. I was with Brother Jack Wood for 20 years, from 1978 to 1998. And I hung on his coattail and gleaned off everywhere. I thought he was the fourth man of the Trinity that sat in heaven. You know how young preachers are. And I used to tell God as I was growing up in the Lord under Brother Jack, I said, Lord, you keep him alive till I'm 50. I think I can make it the rest of the way by myself. Brother Jack died when he was almost 70 years old. You know how old I was? 50 years old. I read a book not too long ago called Company of Heroes. It was about the Mogadishu in Somalia back in 1993, and there was a Delta Ranger captured by the name of Michael Durant. And in the book, he makes this statement in one of the chapters. He begins to write about his comrades. And he writes about Donovan and Cliff and Mike and Dan and Stan and Ray and Bill and Tony. First name friends. Then he makes a statement after he listed all these fellow soldiers. He said within 4 years, we would all be shot down, captured, or killed. Every one of them. Shot down, captured, or killed. But none of them quit. And it'd be another whole message to preach to you what I read. Those men endured in the face of death. I've had friends in the last 30 years. I've seen them get shot down. I've seen them get captured. I've seen some of them get killed physically and spiritually. It's just the nature of war. To see people get killed in the line of fire. But you know what Paul said? And you could go back and look at Paul's life. There was no doubt great friends that he had, great boys that he helped, that died in the line of fire. But it didn't stop him. He didn't quit just because somebody else quit. He didn't quit just because somebody else got shot down, captured, or killed. When he gets down to the end, he's still saying, I fought. I fought. The second thing that Paul begins to reminisce on is the danger. He uses that phrase in verse 5 with his departure at hand. He talks about enduring affliction. He said, you have got to learn how to fight hurt. You have got to learn to be faithful even with pain. Acts chapter 27 says, when the sailing was now dangerous, and sailing to heaven has its seasons of danger. Paul said, sir, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and danger. You're not going on this voyage to heaven without some hurt and damage. You're not going this way through the world without some hurt or damage. You're not going to fight this fight without hurt or damage. You're not going to be a Christian without hurt or damage. You're not going to be a preacher without hurt or damage. Michael Durant was fighting with the best trained military force and equipment in all the world. He was fighting in the best helicopter, that Black Hawk, they say it's the best fighting helicopter that's ever been. He was a seasoned veteran of 3 conflicts. But in seconds, as great as the army he was in, as great as the equipment that he had, as seasoned as he was, in seconds, his buddies were dragged naked through the streets of Somalia. He was shot down and captured himself. And when the Apostle Paul took his command in Acts chapter 9, he looked up and he said, Lord, what would you have me to do? Won't you fight a good fight? Why don't you preach the word? Why don't you care for the church? What he was saying is, to fight a good fight, you got the best God on your side. You couldn't ask for a better God than we got. He said, preach the word. That means you got the best book. I got the best God. I got the best book. Care for the church. I've now got the best institution. Paul had the best God, best book, and the best institution. But still, with all that, in seconds, Paul was captured, shackled, and scourged. Jailed in Caesarea, drugged through the streets of Rome, locked in a cell, perils often of his own countrymen, night and day in the deep, situations he got in that he couldn't get out of. And regardless of it all, Paul merely calls it a fight. That's what he calls it. Everything that he'd been through, when he gets down to the end and he looks back upon it all, it's a fight. You see, church, it's called life. Life in this world is a fight. for whatever you want, for whatever you need, for whatever you desire, whatever you dream of. It's a fight. It don't come without some kind of a fight. It's called life. It's called the ministry. It's called Christianity. And when Paul gets down to the end of his life, he just groups it all up in one word. He just said, I fought a good fight. You want to finish? You want to put him in a casket in front of a pulpit and a preacher be able to stand up and say, he fought through everything and he finished his course. The third thing that Paul brings up, I thought it odd, but he brings up deserters. It's a strange thing to think about at the end of your life, isn't it? He said, Demas forsook me. That was mine own Demas. He makes another statement in this chapter. He said, all those men forsook me. Not everybody can handle the conflict. Well, you wish they could. Not everybody can handle the fight. Not everybody can handle temptation. Michael Durant, they captured him. They killed all of his friends when that helicopter went down. You'd have to read what those men faced to die. But he was the only one that lived. And they captured him and they locked him up in a dark warehouse. He was laying on a filthy, rat-infected floor. He was laying there in pain. And he was wounded and he was all alone. He watched the flies crawl over his bloody legs, but he couldn't do nothing about it because his back was broke. His face was swollen. His jaws were broke. That helicopter crashed. He couldn't walk. He couldn't crawl. He couldn't sit up. And he was totally helpless and all alone. He said he was laying in that warehouse, in that dark, filthy warehouse, just racked with pain. He said all of a sudden he said, I heard a sound from heaven. And those soldiers outside of Somalia had got in those helicopters, and they're flying over Mogadishu, and they got them loudspeakers, and they don't know where Michael Durant's at, but they're flying across that city, and they're going, Michael Durant, we will never leave you. Michael Durant, we'll never forsake you. Michael Durant, we're looking for you. Michael Durant said, when I heard my name, he said, my heart filled up. He said, my hope suddenly was alive. And he said, I begin to weep. And here's the Apostle Paul. He's chained in a Roman prison cell. I dug out every book that I could find on that cell that he was in. And I found an old 1850 book that wrote these words, intolerable filth, no ventilation, lack of rest, poor light, heavy chains, unmerciful state. Paul said, all men forsook me. And then he uses the word notwithstanding. That word notwithstanding, it means does not prevent. For he said, the Lord stood with me. Regardless of how dirty that cell was, regardless of how dark that cell was, regardless of how lonely he was, it did not prevent the Lord from coming and standing beside him and giving him courage and strength. The Lord stood with me and strengthened me, Paul said. John Trapp, the old English divine, said, God is sweet to the saints' deepest distress. He said, God will help those who have been forsaken of hope. And there's going to be times in your life where you are surrounded with the cares of this world. You're going to feel like you're in a cell that's just closing in on you. All your companions won't be able to have one word of help for you. Clouds of doubt are going to blot out heaven, and it's going to be conflict and darkness, and you feel like you can't take another day. But notwithstanding, that does not prevent the Lord our God from standing with us and saying, I will strengthen you, I will never forsake you, I will be with you to the end of the world. So Paul reminisces on this fourth thought, his departure. Michael Durant's laying in this dirty floor, and he's hopeless. Been laying there for quite some time, days upon days. This Somalian soldier walks in and looks at him and he says, you're going home tomorrow. Michael Durant said, when I heard that word home, he said the whole weight, even though his body's racked and broken and black and blue, he's hungry, he's dirty. He said that word hope, that word home just gave me such strength. He said, I began to see images in my mind. He said, I saw home. He said, I can even smell the summer grass of New Hampshire. He said, I saw my friends. I saw my family. And he noted in his Bible, I'm going home today. Right in the middle of that captivity, when he thought everything was against him, they led a Red Cross lady in to see him. And she brought in a care package of things that he might could use. And he was going down through that care package when he got to the bottom. It was a Bible. And he began to read that Bible. He wasn't a religious man. He said, I began to read that Bible. And he said, you know what his favorite book was? Exodus. Because he said, they're getting out. And he made notes in that Bible that gave him such hope and strengthened him. Did you know somehow when you get in those situations that are dark and painful, I don't know how God does it, but he gets a word to us, don't he? He'll give a word to you that'll give you hope, that'll give you strength, that'll give you courage, that'll help you endure your... He'll somehow get a word to you. They carried Michael Durant out of that compound. They put him on that medical plane. They flew him to Germany. When they lifted him off that plane and they brought him down that runway, they're lined up across that airport runway from the plane all the way to the airport. There's 400 soldiers. And they're carrying him down between these soldiers. And as they pass them, soldiers are popping them salutes. There's old Michael Durant coming down through there, and 400 soldiers are saluting him. And when he gets down to the end, there stands the general. And he looks down at Michael Durant, and he said, Michael Durant, to our fallen comrades, he said, we shall never forget. And he handed him a phone and he said, it's the president. He wants to talk to you. Michael Durant said, the only thing I carried out of my captivity was my Bible, because he said, it gave me more help than anything that I had. Here's the Apostle Paul. He's laying all alone in the dark Roman cell. He says, my departure's at hand. Somehow, he got a glimpse of home. He got a glimpse of home. It brought images to him. And then Paul sees the course that he ran. He looks back at that long course. And he sees every hill. He sees every trial. He sees all of the troubles. He sees all the tears, all the difficulties, all the afflictions. And Paul said, I fought my way through it all. The second thing that Paul, the image that comes to his mind is those comrades. All those that love his appearing. Well, a lot of times in prayer, my mind will go back. I got saved in 1976. My mind runs back down through all those men that I met along the way that helped me in the most strategic times of my life. A lot of them have done gone on. Old Jack Davis, the day I got saved, I don't know what that old ex-Marine saw in me, but he got a hold of me and he said, you be in my Bible class next Sunday at 5 o'clock. Boy, Nate, that Sunday at 5 o'clock, he had me in that Bible class. That old ex-Marine, Southern Baptist, but tough as nails. He used to get so mad because they had choir practice at the same time Bible study. He thought that was abomination. He thought everybody ought to be in there while he was teaching that Bible. They said, you can sing later. But boy, he'd get mad. That old man got a hold of me and got my nose in the book when I got saved. He got me preaching in a jailhouse 1 week after I got saved. That old comrade, listen, when it come time for him to die, his wife, I'd go in the week that he died. The hospice had come in. They done took him off all the medicine and took him off all the moisture. Took everything off of him. And he's just laying there looking at the ceiling with them big old blue eyes. His son David had come in from Australia to be with him. And when I'd come in that house, and I went over there every day the last week of his life, and when I'd walk in that bedroom, he'd go, David said, he don't never make a sound till you walk in. That's because he knew I was still in the work and going to carry it on, and he had a big part in it. I'd sit there and get to talking to old Brother Jack, his name was Jack Davis, and boy, I'd pull out that book of Revelation, and I'd get to reading about streets of gold and walls of jasper, and I'd look over there, and Jack would be going, and I'd say, Jack, to get there, save me a seat. I said, I'm a-coming. And when he died, his wife, Mary Linda, said, he wants you to preach the funeral. I'd done gone independent. We Southern Baptists, you know, kind of oil and vinegar with us. And so, Mary Linda called me over to the house, and I'm sitting there with the pastor, Brother Glenn. Me and him are sitting there in the living room, and Mary Linda's telling the pastor what Jack wants at the funeral. And he's telling Brother Glenn, he said, he wants you to read Scripture, but he wants Dan to preach his funeral. And then that pastor looked at me, and he said, you wear boots. I said, yes, sir. He said, you wear boots with your suit? I said, yes, sir. He said, you're going to preach that funeral with a suit and boots? And I said, yes, sir. He said, Miss Scoggins don't like that. And so Miss Scoggins played the organ. And so when I got to preach old Jack's funeral, I pulled my pants leg up like this. Sometimes when you're young, you don't mind aggravating people. I probably wouldn't do it now, but, back then, you just do about anything. But my comrades is what I'm saying. Paul gets down to the end, and he sees his course, and then he sees those comrades. Then he sees the crown. And that crown, he said, the Lord's got a crown for all them that love him. And what that crown is saying that the Lord hasn't forgotten what you've been through. That's what that crown is. That's when you finish your course and step over. He said, it's a crown. He said, listen, I know what you've been through. I've counted every tear. I've watched every trial. And here's the crown. Well done. You finished right. And then that fourth thing that Paul sees is Christ. It's the president. Wants to talk to you. You see, the fight's going to be worth it all one day. I fought a good fight. It's going to be worth it all. When Brother Jack, my old pastor, died, I remember sitting there just 2 days before he went into a coma. And I sat there in the living room with him. I got talking about, I said, I'm going to be preaching. I didn't know what to say to him. I knew he wasn't going to live much longer. And I said, I'm going to be preaching Sunday down to prison. And he was coming in and out then, and he got quiet, and then he said, oh, I wish I was a mouse in the corner. And then he got quiet for a long time. Then he said, Dan, he said, anybody can start. He said, but you got to finish. Anybody can start. You got to finish. And I tell everybody when I get to heaven, I got two judgment seats. I got Jesus and Jack's. I don't know which of them is going to be worse than the other, but I do know if I stumble a long way and don't finish, that old man's going to hurt me. He's going to hurt me. Paul said, I fought a good fight. Don't we all want to finish? Don't we all want to stay with it all the way to the end?